Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Thanks again for listening. Here's the number, 888-914-9149. Half a dozen emails have come in the last several minutes, the last half hour, from people like Linda in Dubuque, Iowa, and others who are weighing in on what do you say when people ask how you're doing. Linda says, when people say, how are you doing, I say, I am blessed, which is always true, even if things aren't going well. She says, I've been saying this for the last 5 years since I had breast cancer, and God greatly blessed me. I believe I was healed of breast cancer after touching the relic of St. Peregrine, patron saint of those with cancer. She says, if people are really interested in how I'm doing, this is also a great conversation starter about God and my faith. Well, thank you, Linda. I appreciate that. And my thanks to all of the rest of you, maybe 6, 7 of the others of you who sent me emails on this point. It's not a topic I ever would have thought would have struck a chord with people, you know, something as simple as saying, how are you, and what you respond. But it's interesting to see how much of a reaction that simple topic brought up. So I just want to say thank you to all of you who wrote to me on this issue. Appreciate that. Where did it go here? I had another one I wanted to read, and I had it right here. And we'll see if I could find it. So, yeah, here's one that comes in from Samantha in Southern California. She said, we went to attend Mass at a different parish. During the homily, the priest did not speak, but a layperson spoke. He was not a deacon. He was dressed in a suit and tie. He sat back down in the pew after his speech. It seemed odd to me. He did not speak directly about any of the readings, just more about Mother's Day and honoring moms. The priest did not even introduce him, nor did the man introduce who he was. Is it appropriate to have a layperson speak during the homily? I thought that was only for the priest or deacon. She says, thank you, I love your show. Well, thank you, Samantha. You're right. Lay people are not permitted to preach sermons at Mass or homilies. That's not something we are allowed to do, nor are religious sisters, by the way. The priest is the one who should be preaching at Mass. Sometimes the priest will permit the deacon to do so, because the deacons do have the faculty, let's say, given to them by the church to preach. It's not typical. I would say it's not normative. The normative person who would be preaching at Mass would be the priest, but definitely not lay people. Now, there are circumstances where if the priest gets up and he gives, it could be a brief sermon, a brief homily, and then he could say, and now we're going to have, you know, Mr. So-and-so from the Knights of Columbus give some talks about our fundraiser or something like that. That is permissible and can be done, but it can't be done if the layperson just simply replaces what would have been a homily given by the priest. That's not supposed to happen. So who knows why it happened at that parish, but it's not supposed to happen. And I hope that helps you. 888-914-9149. We'll go back to the phones. Let's
You go to the phones, can I read an email that I think you'll like this?
Yeah, so, sure.
A lot of this email is confidential, so I'm going to skip all the names and some of the details, but it's really worth sharing. And so the listener writes, I am an old man who truly believes in the power of prayer, and as such, I pray every day for all, especially for my children who have all turned from the faith. I want you to know that your wonderful book, Surprised by Truth, will probably come to their attention after I pass when they find the copies of your book that I've left for them. Yeah. Please pray and ask others to pray that my children will eventually find and lovingly absorb and embrace the spiritual knowledge, wisdom, and true Christian witnessing manifested within your book. It is a wonderful book, and just to let you know how much I like it, I've purchased it over 20 times and for others, and I intend to purchase many more. Thanks again for all you do for the body of Christ. Take care, and may the cup of life for you and yours always overflow with the love and grace of God, your friend in Jesus.
How beautiful. Wow. Yeah, what really is this nice. Caller's name?
He wanted to remain anonymous. Yep.
Wow. Well, that's very touching, and I appreciate that. The let's just all hope and pray that his children do read this book. But I'm wondering, the thought comes to my mind, why not, while still on this side of eternity, why not share it with them? You know, and maybe, who knows, maybe you'll get a response. And why not get the response in this life rather than wait till the life to come? I don't know. I'm more into immediate gratification when it comes to things like this. So just a suggestion, maybe consider giving this book to all of your children now. But at the very least, if this is, you know, part of your plan to leave things for them that they will read after you pass, well, who am I to argue with that? I think that's a good idea in any case. But maybe there's something to be gained by giving it to them now. I don't know. But you're very kind, and I appreciate that. That particular book, as long as I'm at it, Surprised by Truth, I didn't write it. I edited it. So I can't take credit for these powerful testimonies. There are 11 of them. And it has an amazing track record. I can't even fully express to you the things that have happened in the nearly 30 years. I guess next year will be 30 years ago that the book first came out. And it was immediately clear that there was something about these 11 testimonies that really touched people. And just countless stories of people over the years who I've given up. I gave up years ago on keeping files of emails that I would print out and handwritten letters and things from people who would just respond because this book had done something miraculous in the life of somebody they cared about, or in their own lives, for example. And time after time, I've been told about people who read the book and it completely turned them around. So that's why whenever I say, well, you might want to try this book, it's just because so many other people have had this amazing experience of truly dramatic conversions. And the one I've told before, and I can't help myself, I'll just tell it now because it's an example of what I'm talking about. The book came out in 1994, and I got an email from a guy. I've told this story before, so if you've heard it, please just bear with me. I won't belabor the point, but it's worth me telling you this. It'll make sense. I got an email from a guy who was at Regent University, I believe it was, so a Protestant university in Virginia, and he was in the law school. And he sent a note by email just saying, hey, just want to say thank you for this book, Surprised by Truth. It really helped me because I'm like the lone Catholic in this cohort in the law school that I'm in. And everybody's Protestant, and everybody's been, once they found out I was Catholic, they've given me kind of a hard time. You know, you need to become born again. You need to get saved, that kind of thing. And he said he happened to run across the book. The book was helpful to him. And he just said, thank you. So I got that message, and I thought, I had this idea pop into my mind. Maybe it was my guardian angel. I don't know. So I responded saying, thank you for the note, and I would be happy to send you a free case of the book, 44 copies in a case, and I'll pay for the shipping. All I ask is that, because these people think you're crazy for being Catholic, if I ship you this free case of the books, would you just give them a copy of the book? And he said, sure, here's the address. So I shipped it to him, and I think I forgot about it. And I never really knew what happened. It was just sort of one of those things, and I forgot about it. So years go by. I don't know, it's like 10 years go by, and I'm speaking at an event, a conference or something, and this lady comes up to the book table, and she points at that book, because there was a stack of them on the table, and she said, I just want you to know that book brought me into the Catholic Church. She said, I was an evangelical Protestant. I didn't like the Catholic Church, and I read that book, and now I'm Catholic. And I said, oh, well, tell me what happened. And she told me about that guy. She was in that class. And she was in the classroom the day he walks in with this box of books on his shoulder, and he starts passing them out to all of these Protestant folk. And she said, I was offended, because the subtitle is, you know, 11 converts give the biblical and historical reasons for being Catholic. And she says, there are no biblical and historical reasons for being Catholic. But she said she read the book, and it just, she did a 180. And she said, I can't argue with it. I can't argue with this. And she wound up becoming Catholic. And she was crying. She was emotional when she told me the story. So I thought, oh, this is so amazing, because now I finally know, as the saying goes, the rest of the story. I didn't know what happened to that box of books. So now I knew. And I thought, that's great. So I would tell that story from time to time. And many more years went by, maybe another 10 years or so went by. And I happened to be telling that story at another big conference. And it was like, ooh, wow, that's amazing. She, you know, she got a book and she became Catholic. So when I was done, I went and sat down and a gentleman came over to me and he said, that story that you told about the box of books? I said, yeah. He says, well, there's more to that story than you realize. I said, oh, what happened? He said, well, I was in that classroom. I was an evangelical Protestant, not just that lady that you talked to. He said, I think I know who that was. He said, but I was in that classroom. I got a copy of the book. I was Protestant and I wound up becoming Catholic. And I said, no way. He said, yeah. And he gave enough description that it was clear that he really was in that classroom. And I said, that's amazing. And he says, oh, you don't even know the half of it. And he pointed to the back of the big conference center to a priest that was standing by the back door there. And he said, see that priest? He was in the classroom. He was an evangelical Protestant studying to be a lawyer. He obviously got a copy of the book. He not only found his way into the Catholic Church, but he found a vocation to the priesthood. He's serving as a priest now because of that. And then he named like two or three other people that he knew of who were in that class, who received copies of this book, who became Catholic. Mind blown. So I was, I mean, I'm waiting, I suppose, maybe before the end of my life, somebody else will come up and say, well, I was in that classroom too. It could happen. I don't know.
There's more to the story.
Exactly. So it's like the gift that just keeps on giving and giving and giving. Now, you may say, well, okay, that's an interesting story. What are you telling me? What I'm telling you is this. It can be a book. It can be a relevant radio bumper sticker. It can be a CD. It can be, hey, let me tell you about this guy on the radio that I've been talking to. He's got a show. I'm going to text you the link. It could be anything. It just happened in this case to be a book. But when you feel those intuitions in your mind, and it very well could be your guardian angel, prompting you to do something, give something, pass along a book, like the gentleman who wrote the email. What did he say, Cyrus? 20, he's given out 20 copies of that book?
Yes, 20, and he plans on buying more.
It's astonishing. And God bless him. I mean, it's astonishing because this is truly, I believe, and I'm not talking just like about the book. I'm talking about the radio program or relevant radio in general or just good things that teach people the truth. It's like sowing the seeds that Jesus talked about in the parable of the sower of the seed. You don't know what kind of soil it will fall on. It may be that there were some folk in that law school that day who threw the book away. I'm not going to read this. This is ridiculous. There are no good reasons to become Catholic and fling it into the trash can. That's entirely possible. And maybe that's where most of those 44 books went, right into the trash can. I don't know. But it seems from everything I've been told that at least six or seven of those books fell on good, rich, deep soil. And we see what happened. So moral to the story, just be liberal in giving good things away. Be liberal. Be proactive. Put the relevant radio bumper sticker on your car. You may never know and probably never will know until you get to heaven the people who would see it and start listening and have a conversion experience. You won't meet them until you get to heaven, but I'm sure you'll meet them. Good CDs. I like Lighthouse Catholic Media. You can go there and get CDs on just about any Catholic topic. And also digital downloads, because I know who buys CDs anymore, but digital downloads. Just get those digital downloads. You pay a small price for it, and then text it to your son or daughter who's away at college and losing his faith or losing her faith. Give away good books. Go to Catholic Answers and get some of their tracts. They're for pennies. I mean, it's peanuts. We have gold and diamonds lying at our feet, and we don't even stoop down to pick them up. They're there for the taking, and you can use them and give them away. And I just think about all the conversions and all the miracles waiting to happen. If only you and I were willing to stoop down and scoop up those diamonds and gold and share them with others. So that's the story. I know you've heard the story before, Cyrus, but I think it's worth revisiting from time to time. 888-914-9149. Let us go to Queenie. I hope I'm saying it right. In Egypt. Are you calling from Egypt, Queenie?
Yes. Hi.
Hello.
Good morning, Patrick. Good morning there. And I am in St. Catherine Monastery right now, guest house. My friends and I are staying here for 3 nights, and this is our first night. And have you been here?
I have not been to Egypt, no. Maybe someday I will, but I haven't been there yet.
Okay. Our question is this the real Mount Sinai in the Bible? Because we were looking at YouTube. There was a blogger that mentioned that the Mount Sinai is in Saudi Arabia.
That's one location that some people say. There's another one way south in the section between Cairo and Egypt in the wilderness where the people wandered. I think that's another possible location of Mount Sinai. My impression is that there are about three different places based on the scriptural description that people think could be Mount Sinai. I'm not an expert by any means on this, but that's what I understand.
Okay. Because we plan to, on Saturday morning, we plan to hike the summit of this Mount Sinai.
What a beautiful thing. Now, are you an American pilgrim who happens to be there, or are you from Egypt, or what is your background?
We are from California, actually. I attended your class one time online. We're Californians, and we're from Sacramento, California, and we're just visiting here.
Okay.
And we started in Turkey, and now we're in Egypt right now.
Beautiful.
Next we'll be back in the U.S.
We love doing those pilgrimages.
We're so blessed.
Yeah, Nancy and I love doing those pilgrimages. In fact, we came back from the most recent one to the Holy Land. And I know what you mean. It's so eye-opening to be able to see all these holy sites. Let me give you a recommendation. I think you'll find this very helpful. There is a diary of a pilgrim, a woman named Egeria, E-G-E-R-I-A. Are you familiar with her? Have you heard about her?
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't heard.
I would really encourage you to get a hold of this book. It's called, I think it's called Diary of a Pilgrimage, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's Diary of a Pilgrimage.
Okay.
And her name again is Egeria, E-G-E-R-I-A. There are a couple different spellings, but that's the more common one.
Mm-hmm.
And she was writing in the 400s. So she was a Catholic pilgrim going on a pilgrimage to all the holy sites. And in this diary that she wrote, with very, very detailed, with descriptions of places like Mount Sinai, she describes what she saw in the 400s when she was on this pilgrimage. She describes at each place where they would celebrate Mass, for example, and receive Holy Communion. She described some amazing things like the monks that were in the monasteries at some of these holy places would show the pilgrims, this is the place where the burning bush was, where God spoke to Moses in Exodus chapter 3, things that are lost to us now. So maybe when you get back from your pilgrimage, read this. It's just really eye-opening. And one of the beautiful things about it is you're a Catholic pilgrim and you're going to all these holy places, and countless generations of Catholic pilgrims have gone there before you and have seen the same things that you're seeing today all these centuries later. I find that thrilling when you think about that.
Yes, yes. We're so blessed that we were able to do this.
I'm glad.
And
I'm glad.
One more question, Patrick, is what are the churches that we can visit in Cairo? I know you've been there before.
Well, actually, I have not been to Cairo, so I don't have any advice on that. I really, on the air, I don't really know what to recommend to you. A guidebook would be good. A Catholic guidebook, so much the better. But I'll have to take a rain check on that one, Queenie, because I don't have any info on that. But maybe in one of my future pilgrimages, maybe I will. We'll see what happens. Thank you, and travel safe. And please pray for us, all of us here at Relevant Radio, at the holy sites that you visit. We'd sure appreciate that. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
Today, we'd like to thank Priscilla, who's listening in California, for donating her Pontiac Firebird. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay. Love the energy. Thank you. Let's get back to the phones. Laura in Huntington Beach, California. Thank you for waiting and welcome.
Hi, Patrick. This is my first time calling. I've been listening to you for a while.
Well, thank you. So, thanks for both things.
My question is, I've been trying to have a relationship with Christ. I actually I had a miracle from St. Joseph. Okay. I never believed the miracles, to be honest, but it hit me when I just knew it was him. He got me a job near a church where I discovered something about the church was very beautiful. So I've been going to the Eucharist and trying to have a relationship with him. But lately, a couple days ago, I started feeling very, 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 I didn't want nothing to do with God or with church. And it was an internal battle. Well, long story short, I ended up sinning again, something I've been struggling with. And I've been on the point where I've had a relationship with him fall and get so discouraged because I've already hurt him enough and I don't want to hurt him no more.
Okay. And is this a boyfriend you're talking about?
No, with Jesus. Oh, no, my relationship with Jesus. I don't want to hurt him.
Okay, gotcha.
And I keep falling, and when I do sin, I feel so bad to the point where I don't want to go back to him. And then I think, oh, his mercy, but it's so difficult. And I fell again. I've sinned, and I don't know at what point do I feel like every time I do that, I just feel like quitting. I do not know what to do. You know, when they say the soil, I'm not good soil, and it's driving me crazy because no matter how hard I try, I can't do it. I can't find a steady relationship with him. I see all these people have this this relationship and they never look back. I want to be them, but I can't.
Well, let's start there. I would like to disagree with you and say you can, and I do believe you will. You will have a good relationship with the Lord. Your desire is the key thing. You want to be near Jesus. You love him, and you're trying. You know, as you're describing this, Laura, it kind of reminds me of the woman that we read about in the Gospels who comes to Jesus and kneels in front of him and sheds tears on his feet and washes his feet with her tears and dries them with her hair. Think of how utterly humble, you know, this abject humility that she shows. She's sorry for her sins, and she's doing the one thing she can think to do, and that is to show Jesus that she's sorry. She doesn't say anything. She just has this abject humility. And I'm thinking that that is you, you know, and you are coming to the Lord and saying, I don't know how to do this myself. I want to be close to you. I want to be faithful to you. And I don't want to fall into the sins. And I don't know what to do, Lord. Please save me. And he will. He will give you what you're asking for. The one thing is for sure, Laura, the Lord is not going to turn his back on you. He's not going to say, well, sorry. You know, you keep failing, and I, you know, until you can get your act together, I'm not interested in talking to you. That's exactly the opposite of what Jesus does. You know, you're like that lost sheep. You know, remember how Jesus talks about the good shepherd leaves the 99 sheep who aren't lost and goes in search of the one who is lost. You know that story?
Yeah. My question to follow up with that, when do I know, at what point does someone know, oh, that they're not the lost sheep, but it's just, I don't know.
I think I have an answer for that. You'll know that you're no longer the lost sheep when you let Jesus pick you up and bring you back. That's how you'll know, because then you're not lost anymore. And obviously in this life, we're sinful, so we fall, we get back up again, we fall, we get back up again. But eventually what will happen is you'll stop falling. Right now you're in that phase where you're weak and your will is weak and the temptations are strong and you fall, but you get back up again. But eventually, as time goes on and your faith becomes stronger and the grace in your soul becomes stronger, you will fall less and less, and then you'll get to the point where you don't fall anymore, at least not into serious sin. And that takes time. That takes time. Now, in the meantime, whoever or whatever the things are that cause you to fall into these sins, you need to start eliminating those things from your life. So if it's a boyfriend, if it's a smartphone, if it's certain companions or places that you like to go and hang out or things, you know, part of letting Jesus bring you back to the sheepfold is you have to eliminate the things that cause you to fall and wander away, whatever those things are. And start replacing them with the sacraments, prayer, listening to relevant radio, feeding your mind and your soul on the good things of life, the things that Jesus wants to give you. You know, feed on those things. And the things that are spiritual disasters for you, those get more and more pushed away until they're no longer in your life. You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Patrick.
Let me give you one other little bit of advice, if I may, Laura, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
That voice that's telling you to give up, that voice that's telling you that you're not worthy or that you'll never be with Jesus, that's from the devil. Okay? That's from the devil. He's lying to you. So when you have those feelings or you feel that little voice, why bother? You're just going to fall into sin again. Why bother going to confession? Don't even try. Give up. Jesus doesn't love you. He doesn't care. Just stomp on that as hard as you can and ignore it, because that's just the lie of the devil. That's all that is.
Okay. Well, thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Hang in there, okay? Chin up. Keep listening. Keep listening. Will you do that? At the very least, will you just keep listening?
I will.
Okay. Because we're here for you. All right. Bye-bye, Laura. You know, I think everything that we just heard in that call could be said of any one of us. You know, at some point in life, you maybe feel discouraged or you feel that little voice whispering in your ear, give up, come on. You're never going to do it anyway. I really do believe the only way to deal with that is stomp on it. That's all. And move forward in faith. Jesus loves you and he wants you to be happy. The devil will always lie to you. So any message that comes to you that's contrary to Jesus and loves you and wants you to be happy, that's not from the Holy Spirit. Let's go to Stephanie now in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Where do I start? Okay. So I guess I have a question for you. I have millions, but I'll just have one.
Okay.
I have a fiance, and I love him so much. I'm so happy to be with him. And he was baptized Catholic, but after that, his parents just stopped. That was it. You know, they didn't carry on any teachings or anything like that. Me, on the other hand, I went to CCD. I was confirmed, baptized, First Communion, everything. And I've always been up and down in my faith, and I always struggled with it. I still do, but now I'm closer than I ever was.
Okay.
And I am worried about, is this going to be a problem getting married, because I know I want to marry him and spend my life with him, but I worry if he doesn't believe in God, then, you know, what do I, like, I pray for him. I don't know what else to do. And sometimes he'll come to church with me, and sometimes he asks me questions, and he's trying. We've even met with a deacon already to arrange a marriage and stuff like that.
And what is his reaction when he has those meetings with the deacon?
He's very quiet. He's very kept to himself.
Is he a believer in Jesus at all?
No.
Okay. This is a tough one because you love him, obviously. You love him, and he loves you. How old are the two of you?
We're 24.
Okay. So you're mature adults. Have either of you been married before?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Have either you or he or both of you ever been married before?
Never, no.
Okay, okay. And has he said to you in so many words that he wants to marry you?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe what about just saying to him, I love you and I can easily imagine spending the rest of my life with you, but I have a really serious question. That is, how could we make this work if you and I don't share the most fundamental reality of all, and that is God and how we should relate to God? Have you had that frank conversation with him yet?
A little bit like that. I've told him, like, I tell him that he needs to try. And I told him, I was like, you know, if you weren't willing to try to do any of this that you're already doing, I wouldn't be able to marry you. And he said, he knows. And that's why he does try. And he says he's trying very hard. It's just hard for him to believe, and he just doesn't understand it. And
okay.
Stuff like that.
That's understandable. I mean, if he doesn't get it, and you can't blame the poor guy because his parents, I mean, no disrespect, but they were derelict in their duty and they didn't raise him in the faith. So
yes.
I don't blame him for that.
Yeah, their reason for it was they said, well, we both came from divorced families. And I said, well, I also came from divorced parents. And I continue to learn and try my best.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I can see, I mean, there's something here, obviously, and you do love each other, and you have the right goal in mind. You want to have a happy marriage that's built firmly on the foundation of Jesus. That's important.
Yes.
He seems to be at least, you know, ostensibly, he seems to be open to this, but do I get the correct impression that there's not much progress? Is that what you're referring to? He says he's trying, but you don't really see much progress?
Kind of in a way. I always try to bring it up to him and mention him, but I also don't want to, like, shove it down his throat. You know what I mean? People don't like that. Nobody likes being forced and nagged. So.
Right. That's true. And I don't advocate that. That's for sure. Maybe if you put it in these terms, that if we want to get engaged or get married, if you're already engaged, we're going to need to go through the process of preparation in the church. That takes several months. Marriage prep, it's known as. Are you committed to doing that? Yeah.
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit on the little few seconds still.
Sure. So just marriage prep. That's part of getting ready for marriage. And I would talk with him about that and just ask him, are you prepared to do this? And we're going to do it together. Are you up for that? And if he says yes, okay, that's good. And that will help with the formation. But if I were you, I would personally really work on that as a goal to say, I don't want to be unequally yoked with you, and I don't want you to be unequally yoked with me. And as much as I love you, I don't want to be married to you in a situation where I'm going to Mass on Sunday and I'm taking the kids with me, but you're not because you don't believe it. And one of the reasons why, Stephanie, is that inevitably the children eventually will stop going if the father doesn't lead spiritually, and if he's not going to Mass, if he doesn't show that he's a believer in Jesus, eventually the kids are going to fall away no matter what mom does. It just seems to work out that way. And you could bring that up to him and just say, I want us to be united together in every respect. and in raising our children and teaching them the faith. And, you know, maybe the thing to do is to say, you know, I'm willing to wait until you're ready to take that step. And I mean, really take the step, because you believe it, because it's in your heart, in your conviction that you want to be a Catholic. But if you're not ready to do that, then I don't think we're ready to get married, because we're going to have a built-in friction. There's going to be a built-in disparity between the two of us right at the heart of our marriage. And I know you don't want that, and I don't want that. What do you think he would say if you put it in those terms?
Well, I actually don't know what yoked means. But another thing is, he is okay with coming to church and coming to Mass with me. He is okay with raising our children Catholic. My dad was the only one that made sure we made it to CCD and to church. My mom never. So and nowadays, that I'm an adult, I have to beg my dad to come to church with me, and now my mom will come with me.
So you can see what I'm talking about. Being yoked, what that means is, if you think about two oxen, they have that wooden kind of a bar on their shoulders, and that way they can pull together in the same direction. To be unequally yoked would be, imagine if you had an ox and a dog, you know, like two very different sized animals. They would be unequally yoked. The yoke couldn't sit evenly on their shoulders. And they couldn't pull the ox cart together, because one is not pulling the weight that the other is pulling. That's what that means, to be unequally yoked.
Oh,
but you can see, with your own mom and dad, right? You can see that there is this strange, it's like trying to run a three-legged race. People are not... Go ahead.
Both my parents are Catholic. They were born and raised in the Catholic Church. They've been divorced since I was a little kid, but they get along, you know, they'll be friends and stuff like that. It just so happened their marriage didn't work out. I mean, you know, they both believe in the church.
Well, I have a 24-year-old daughter, Stephanie, and I would tell you what I've told her. And I mean, she is engaged now to, just so happens, it's interesting, because she's engaged to a young man who was very similar to your fiancé's situation. He was baptized Catholic. His parents fell away from the faith, and he was never raised Catholic. And he didn't know anything. He didn't know what he didn't know. And so when he started dating my daughter and they became more serious, she said to him, well, I love you and I want to be with you, but I don't want to get married to somebody who's not a Catholic and a practicing Catholic. And he says, well, what do I need to do to find out more? She said, well, let's get started with some instruction at the parish. And he was willing to do it. And man, did he catch fire. He caught fire. And he is now on his way into the Catholic Church. And he's a fine young man. And he's not becoming Catholic for her. He's becoming Catholic because he believes in Jesus and he wants to be in the Catholic Church. And so she's overjoyed, as you can imagine. But she told him, this is a requirement for me, because I want a happy, stable marriage where there's no division between the two of us. So I guess what I'm saying, Stephanie, is, you know, if you were my daughter, I would give you that same advice that I gave her, so that she can be happy and that your marriage would have a better chance of making it in the long haul.
Okay.
You know?
I will give that a shot.
Good. And maybe, you know, if he has some questions, I'd love to talk to him. He's more than welcome to talk to me. Give me a call if you want. But you're on a good path. I would just say stay on that path and keep praying and keep giving good example and keep pushing in a good way. You know what's right. You know what you want. And if Jesus is at the center of everything, it's going to work out okay, one way or the other. Thanks, Stephanie. I'll be right back. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? Our sponsor, Creative Planning, has options. More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Real life solutions you can believe in.
The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we're back. Thanks again. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go to David now in Anaheim, California. Hi, David. Hi, David. Your phone's breaking up a little bit. Okay, let's try it again.
Can you hear me?
Not really. Tell you what, David, your phone is just breaking up. So, Sarah, can you get on with David and figure out what's going on? And I'll come back to you, David, once we sort that out. Let's go to Anne Marie now in Massachusetts. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
Now, I remember you were talking several days ago, I think maybe last week, about the brain. And it started me thinking. And I'm a retired scientist, so I've always been interested in medical things.
Okay.
And when a woman is carrying a baby, some of the stem cells from the baby work their way into her circulation through mm-hmm. the umbilical cord and the placenta. And those stem cells implant themselves onto various organs of the mother, the brain, the liver, different organs. And they've proved that by doing autopsies on women. And they will find male cells, if the woman was carrying a boy baby, that they've just determined that it has come from the child.
Okay.
And I was thinking about that in relation to the Blessed Virgin Mary when she was carrying Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
She has some of Jesus' cells that implanted themselves into her body.
That's right.
And I just think it's very interesting to think about that part of God is actually physically in her body.
That's right. But remember this, though, Anne-Marie, this what you're saying is scientifically true. But one thing to remember is that the divinity of Jesus is not part of his body. So he's true God and true man. He's a divine person who took a human nature. But his human nature is still a creature. It's human. So those cells, the DNA that transferred through this process into the body of the Blessed Virgin Mary does not mean that she has any divinity in her. She does not. That's not what this would entail. This would mean that his sacred humanity, some portion of it in the form of the DNA and the cells is in her body. That much is true, but it's still his humanity. It's not his divinity. So divinity did not pass into the body of the Blessed Virgin Mary. We can't go that far because that would be a mistake to think that that's what happened.
Okay. Yes, I didn't realize that the divinity was not in the physical body, that it was in the soul of Jesus.
Well, not even that. Actually, what's interesting, I know what you're saying, the soul of Jesus is human also. So when Jesus, when the second person of the Trinity became flesh, as it says in John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And verse 14 says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. This is the incarnation. When that happened, the second person of the Trinity, God the Son, united to himself a complete human nature. So the person is God who has a human nature, and that includes the soul, the mind, the intellect, the will, the body, all those things that are proper to a human nature. Jesus has all of those things. So even in his soul, it's still human. The soul of Jesus is human. It's a creature, but it's united to his divinity. And I realize this is very, you know, kind of a very profound thing to think about. But it's important that we keep that kind of clarity so that we don't go beyond, even though it's amazing, the transfer of DNA into the body of the Blessed Virgin Mary. That is amazing, you know, as it is, I suppose, for any mm-hmm. mother. But we don't want to lean too heavily on that and wind up thinking something that didn't really happen, that his divinity passed into her. But I think you and I are on the same page now, right?
Yes. Okay. I was thinking about, like, when we receive the Holy Eucharist, it's Christ's body, blood, soul and divinity, but the divinity is separate from the body and soul and blood.
Yeah, they're distinct, that's for sure, but they're united. And that's where it becomes difficult for us to imagine that. How can God also have a human nature? And it's in the form of an instrument, you might say. In the incarnation, God, the second person of the Trinity, took to himself a human nature as an instrument. The way, for example, if you were to pick up a pen and start writing with it, your thoughts, you and what you're thinking are conveyed through the pen, but the pen is an instrument. It's distinct from you, and yet you're using it to convey the meaning that's in your mind. That's not a perfect analogy, but it's helpful to think about that.
Right.
Well, I hope this is helpful to you. What a beautiful thing to ponder.
Yes, I thought it was very, interesting to think about, because when they wrote that scientific article, they weren't thinking about Jesus and the Blessed Mother. And
right.
I like to think of it from that aspect.
That's a good point. Well, it's a beautiful thought. I'm glad you raised it, Anne-Marie. Thank you. And thanks for listening to the show. Let's go to David now in Anaheim, California. We'll try it again, David. Welcome.
Thank you, Patrick. I'm sorry. I was en route while you took my call the first time.
Oh, no
but
problem.
Long-time listener. I wish I could say I was a cradle Catholic. I was baptized, had my first communion. But my story is this. I've been married 26 years now, of which 19 were through the church. My wife and I, cradle Catholic, extremely devout.
Okay.
We attended Mass in the beginning of our marriage, but what I didn't realize, and she made a point to me once we had our first child, was she had never taken communion because we had not been married in the church. And she told me if I did not marry her in the church, that she would divorce me. And of course, being a procrastinator that I am, I let time slide by, and a year had gone by, and she said, "I'm serious. Marry me in the church. I will divorce you, child and all." And that really caused me to get my act together and track down all the places that I, different sacraments, whether it was in downtown LA or San Antonio, Texas. But I got my affairs in order, got my adult confirmation, and I am so happy to tell you. If not for her strength of faith, I wouldn't be here today, with a blessed family. And, what can I say? I was so fortunate that God put her in my life,
I can only imagine. Thank God for a great woman, right?
Oh, as strong as could be. And I think the woman's name is Stephanie, whose boyfriend, I guess, had some Catholic roots.
Yeah.
Stand in your faith. Let them know how important this is. There's no substitute. You have to have God. You have to have church, and complete your sacraments. That's all there is to it.
What a beautiful story, David, and a happy ending to boot.
Oh yeah. Well, God bless Immaculate Heart. I'm sorry. Relevant Radio. I've been listening for a while.
I can tell. Immaculate Heart Radio. This is who we were in the West before the merger. But no, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, but no. Thank you for hearing my story. But again, if not for faith, I wouldn't be here today.
Well, I'm so glad you are, David. I'm so glad you called to share that beautiful story and pass along my kind regards to your lovely wife. Thank you. Real quick, here's an email that came in from Nicole. She's listening on the Relevant Radio app. She says, "If I know I'm not receiving the Holy Eucharist because of mortal sin, am I still required to fast before Mass?" The answer is no. You are required to fast for an hour before receiving Holy Communion, not before Mass. I mean, it's even less difficult than fasting an hour before Mass, but fasting an hour before receiving Holy Communion. So strictly speaking, no, you're not required to do that because you're not planning to receive Holy Communion. If you were going to receive Holy Communion, obviously not in the state of mortal sin, then yes, you're required to fast for 1 hour before receiving. And that means no food or liquid. Can you have cough syrup if you have bronchitis? Yes. Can you take medicine if you're sick? Yes. But you can't eat food and you can't have beverages, including coffee, although you are allowed to have water. Other than that, no food or beverages for an hour before receiving Holy Communion. Hope that helps. Thank you. Let's go to Esmeralda now in Colton, California, right off the 10 freeway. Good morning, good morning, Esmeralda. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you. I was calling because my daughter, she's in public school. She's in seventh grade, and her history teacher is like, he's teaching them about, like, you know, the history of the religions and stuff, different, mm-hmm. the big different religions. And I just want to know, like, why did he say that in the Catholic Church a long time ago? People would, you know, people would be killed, and that that people would pay money for their sins.
Well, who knows? The issue of paying money for your sins probably is a garbled account of indulgences and a scandal that arose in the 16th century when there was a Dominican friar who was teaching people that if they made if they gave alms for the purpose of completing the dome on the current St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, that they would receive an indulgence that could help somebody get out of purgatory. And so there's some truth there, but the way it was preached was scandalous because people thought that they were paying money to get sins forgiven. That's a big topic that I'd have to have more time to unravel. But as far as the Catholic Church killing people, individual Catholics have certainly killed people. That's true. But not the Catholic Church. You know, the Catholic Church is all about trying to lead people to salvation, not killing them. So that too sounds like a garbled something or other. Maybe it was about the Crusades, who knows? But if you can call me another time, Esmeralda, I'd be happy to dig deeper into those things. Thank you. Well, until tomorrow, I will pray for you. Please pray for me and everyone else here at Relevant Radio. God bless you.